Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. This morning we have three matters on the oral submission docket. In the order of which they will be presented, they are General Motors Corporation versus Rita Iracheta and others from Webb County and the 4th Appellate Judicial District, Tom Alexander individually and as Alexander and McKevely versus Turner Associates Incorporated and others from Harris County and the 1st Appellate Judicial District, and New Times Incorporated and others versus Bruce Isaac and Darlene Whitten from Denton County and the 2nd Appellate District. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and will complete the arguments by noon. These arguments are being recorded by our clerk's office, and you may purchase a tape of any argument for a nominal charge. Justice Jefferson is at home sick. But he would not be sitting. He will not be sitting on the first case, but he will be sitting on the next two cases. He will participate by listening to the tapes and by reading the briefs. We're pleased to welcome Judge Brister, our newest Justice of the Supreme Court, with us today, and he will have a formal swearing-in ceremony in the weeks to come. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in General Motors versus Iracheta.
Please report. Ms. Sharon Calloway will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This is a crashworthiness case where the central issue is, was there legally sufficient evidence of producing cause when the Court of Appeals has based its holding solely on the existence of a defect? And here that defect is that the vehicle was siphoned. Both Iracheta's proof at trial and the Court of Appeals legal sufficiency review focuses solely on the existence of a defect and therefore omits a very critical element of producing cause, and that is causation. Did the defect cause an injury-producing event? And here the injury-producing event is the second fire, the gasoline fire that we've all called the whoosh because of the sound it makes. Here, the defect quite simply did not cause the injury-producing event because, according to the only expert qualified to testify, at least plaintiff's expert qualified to testify, on siphoning or fuel system defects, the defect and the siphoning is in the front of the vehicle, and according to the only expert, plaintiff's only expert, to testify, qualified to testify on fire and causation origin, the fire, the injury-producing event, is in the rear of the vehicle, and the fire causation expert says the siphoning in the front absolutely cannot cause the defect in the rear. So you can't get the two together.
And with the operative word of your statement is qualified to testify. And I believe the argument is over Mr. Sanchez's.
Yes.
So should we just turn to that?
Whether or not
you properly preserved any objection that you might have had to his qualifications and whether he was qualified.
Certainly, Your Honor. As the Court of Appeals noted and held, GM, both in a motion and at a hearing that was held before trial, attacked or moved first to exclude Sanchez, and the fire expert's name is Ed Sanchez, moved to exclude Sanchez's testimony because, moved to exclude him totally, saying he wasn't qualified on fire and causation. That's not at issue here. In the same motion and at the same hearing, they made the argument in his deposition. He had given some opinion saying, well, I think the car siphoned. I feel like it siphoned at the rear, but I don't know. I don't know where it siphoned. And we said he's not qualified to give any opinion on siphoning. And at a trial, it's clearly established by his own testimony that he's not qualified to do so. He said, I don't know anything about automobile design. I don't know anything about fuel systems. I don't know anything about the principles of siphoning. And he, in fact, demonstrates that he doesn't know anything about the principles of siphoning. But he says, so we say he's not qualified to do that. Arashetta argues, well, you withdrew that objection, and the court overrules our objection, our motion and our objection. And Arashetta says, well, you withdrew that objection because in the course of the hearing, Arashetta has responded to our argument about exclusion because he's not qualified on the fire causation thing. And the judge says, well, does he need to talk about siphoning? And General Motors counsel says no, and the reason is we could never have excluded his testimony entirely on just the fact that he couldn't give evidence as to siphoning. He was there to talk about fire causation, and so that's what we're saying. We're absolutely right. That's not a withdrawal. You look through that entire transcript of the hearing, you look through, and there's no word of, well, we withdraw our whole objection. It was just that, no, we're not moving to exclude him on the basis of his siphoning. But that doesn't change it. And in Ellis, this court says, so long as you raise an objection to the qualifications, and we did. And moreover, he establishes at trial by his very own evidence. And I would say to the court that whether he's qualified or not doesn't end the complete inquiry. Let's say his evidence comes in. Let's say the Court of Appeals, for purposes of this argument, let's say that the Court of Appeals is wrong, that evidence comes in. We've now got to apply a circumstantial evidence, no evidence, standard of review to that evidence. It's not direct evidence, because remember what Sanchez's opinion on siphoning or on the defect is that the rear rubber hose it did not burn through. That's what the fuel expert says. I think it burned through.
Well, it didn't actually say that. It said it could have.
He says there's one explanation. Yeah, he says there's one explanation.
That's a possible explanation.
It's a possible explanation.
But here's where I'm confused, is it seems to me that the witnesses seem to agree that it doesn't matter where the line opened up. And that's what the Court of Appeals turned its opinion on, that whether it opened up at the front or the back doesn't matter because the defect is siphoning. So
you're absolutely right, Your Honor, about what the Court of Appeals said and what Stilson said. And Stilson gets confronted with, well, Sanchez says it siphoned at the back and you say it siphoned at the front. How do you explain that? He says, well, it doesn't make any difference because it siphons. That's the defect. And keep in mind that Stilson is the defect expert. He has put his defect blinders on, and that's all he's looking at, and rightly so. That's all he should be looking at. But the finding of a defect, and that is GM's whole point about the Court of Appeals holding, is that all it does is say that it's a defect. And as far as a defect, it doesn't matter whether it siphons at the front or the back. But to get to injury producing or produce that the defect produces the fire, it does matter.
Well, and it seems like they say that whether it opened at the front or the back, the siphoning caused there to be fuel that shouldn't have been there. So it didn't matter where it ignited. The defect caused the fuel to be there.
Well, staying with the circumstantial evidence review, the thing the court's got to do is look at the reasonableness of that opinion. At the same time, even in a traditional no evidence standard of review, the court does not disregard undisputed evidence that has only one logical inference. And there's a body of evidence in this case that nobody disagrees with, and that's basic fluid mechanic principle.
Well, let me put it this way. And this is, I'm trying to connect the dots. It seems like
easy.
The experts say it doesn't matter where it opened up. It allowed gas to be around. It allowed gas out of the fuel system. Eyewitness testimony, ignition in the rear. Why is that not enough?
That's what I'm headed to with this. Just basic physics principles, basic siphoning principles. And the first one is, to siphon, you got to have a closed line. And it's got to open up in one place and only one place. If it opens up in two places, you don't have the necessary pressure differential so that it will siphon. Because remember, it's got to draw, to siphon, it's got to draw gasoline out of the tank. And here's a second principle why that will not work. And nobody in the trial disputes that fact. And in fact, it's the whole principle behind a brake hole. If you have two holes, if you put a hole in a straw, it won't siphon liquid up. Here, under the evidence as it stands, remember, that the in the crash, the vehicle hits the 18-wheeler with its left side. The fuel system lines are going down the left. These return lines that we're concerned with are going down the left side. So that part of the system bears the brunt of the crash. And as Stilson points out, and rightly so, though we disputed that the crimping defeated that, but we're going to look only at Stilson's evidence. And Stilson's evidence says, well, there's damage here, and that's why he comes to the conclusion it's siphoned in the front. He says, there's no crimping, there's no damage in the back. GM's expert, again undisputed, says it would take 1,000 pounds of pressure to compromise that hose, to make it break or come off. And if there had been 1,000 pounds of pressure back here, like there was up the front to crimp the lines, then you would have had damage to the lines. And it's undisputed in the record, there's no damage to these fuel lines back here. The second principle of siphoning, which means this Sanchez's opinion that it's siphoned in the rear won't work, is at the crash, there's damage here.
You're making a leap here. I mean, my understanding, let's presume that it did siphon in the front. Well, how does that make you win? I mean, my understanding of their testimony is whether it siphoned front or back doesn't matter. Let's presume it's siphoned in the front. That'll have gas out of the system.
Here's why. There are two reasons. The first reason is Sanchez's opinion is the hose compromised at impact. You know you've got damage up here. If you have simultaneous impact, and impact is like that and over, you have simultaneously opening of that fuel line, there's no pressure to siphon. So it can't siphon. If it compromised at both ends, it can't siphon. The second reason that we win and that this theory doesn't work, and it's the reason that Sanchez changes his testimony and moves the siphoning. You recall the accident caught diesel spewed, the 18-wheeler's diesel spewed. There's this huge diesel fire, so much so that three grown men can't get Edgar out of the car because the seatbelt's too hot, the doors are too hot, there's fire on the console, there's fire, the firewall's been broken down, there's fire coming into the vehicle. There's a huge diesel fire going on right near where those fuel lines come into the engine. So if the siphoning takes place there, under the fire cause and origin expert, if the siphoning's right there, you have got an explosion or a whoosh much, much, much faster than the 5 to 10 minutes. And it's undisputed. Everyone accepts that there was a 5 to 10 minute delay, and you're not going to get that if gasoline is leaking out right next to this fire. And that's why Sanchez's opinion under a circumstantial evidence review, even if it comes in, even if you say the Court of Appeals was wrong and he was qualified to say that, it doesn't work. It's not a reasonable inference. It's not a reasonable inference under the evidence because a second thing you've got to look at when you do a circumstantial evidence review is what did the jury have to disbelieve in order to reach this opinion? Well, Stilson will never back off of his testimony. He will say it opened up in the rear. Opening up is not the same. Opening up just means there's a hole in it. It does not mean that gas is coming out of that hole. Arshetta's sole theory of this case is that gas had to siphon out for a period of 5 to 10 minutes, and that's a good period of time.
Ms. Calloway,
had to siphon out that long.
Let me direct your attention back to the waiver issue. Briefing indicates that the objection to Sanchez's change in opinion, if that's what it was, and failure to supplement, which is what you argue, wasn't made until after the close of your cross-examination of him. Was that too late?
In my opinion, it was not. And, Your Honor, there are really two ways that we go at Sanchez's opinion. We go at it as Chief Justice Phillips referred to, with he's just not qualified, and then we also attack it under the duty to supplement. And the case law says
it's not. Let me ask one other question before you finish answering. The opinion, the change in opinion that you're complaining about occurred during his direct examination?
It's about 77 pages, is my recollection, into his direct. And the problem you have, Your Honor, is that Sanchez testifies first. We've had depositions from both of them. Stilson says siphoning's in the front. Sanchez says, I don't know, fire's in the back. We get to trial. Sanchez testifies first. And one of the first things he says in his direct is, well, Stilson says it siphons in the rear. So we're sitting there thinking, well, I guess Stilson's going to change his testimony. So we don't know for a long period of time whether Stilson indeed is going to change his testimony. Now, I don't know if what Sanchez was trying to do was sort of play a sleight of hand, which I would say to you the Court of Appeals bought into, and that was opening up is the same as siphoning, and it is not. But that's our problem there. If Stilson had gone on first and we had known that Stilson's opinion was it siphoned in the front, yes, it opened up in the rear, but it siphoned, and he uses the word initially. And as I said to you, you know, as I said earlier, that's almost a redundant thing to say because there is no initial and secondary siphoning. There's one siphoning. It happens one time. You put another hole in that line, siphoning stops.
Do you know what page in the record Sanchez's statement that you just mentioned is? There are excerpts from some of the examination across in here. Do you know what page
that is? I don't recall off the top of my head, Your Honor, but I will look.
That's okay.
And
we'll find it.
Get it to you on rebuttal. I guess I've been circling around talking about... I guess I'll quit circling.
Well, actually, you said that Sanchez's statement about what Stilson was going to testify to confused you a little bit, made you wonder what was happening. But then you still continued through your entire cross-examination before raising that objection. Talk about why there was the...
Because we've got to
wait
try...
until...
I'm sorry.
The end of cross to get on that basis.
Because we've got to try to figure out, has Stilson changed, is our objection to duty to supplement more properly focused on Stilson? And we're trying to figure that out. And there's case law that says that you can object after you've got to make an objection. And just because the witness's testimony is over does not change the fact. And when you step back and look at all the circumstances of it, he has definitely changed his opinion from that. And it's not what he told us. Stilson has not changed his opinion.
If your quandary was trying to decide whether your objection should be to Stilson's testimony rather than Sanchez's, wouldn't that suggest that the objection would have waited till Stilson testified then? So you could see exactly what Stilson was going to say?
I suppose we could have, Your Honor. I think we
felt... wouldn't that have provided the answer to the quandary that you raised?
I suppose it would have, Your Honor.
So why did you raise the objection at the end of Sanchez's cross rather than during Stilson's testimony?
I quite frankly can't answer that, Your Honor, because all I've seen is the record. I don't know what was going through the litigator's mind, but they are trying to deal with a change... A complete and different change in the theory of defect. And I'm sorry.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court. Mr. Lusso, argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. I'm Luke Soles here with Mr. Marable, who I represent the Gila Chitnas. There are three features of this case that are predicate features that are at this point undisputed for purposes or for any purposes for further progress of this case. One, that there was a product defect in the failure of General Motors to provide anti-siphoning mechanism in the fuel return line. Two, that the fire that killed Edgar Iracheta was a gasoline fire, and three, that gasoline came from the tornado. General Motors' argument today focuses on the question of causation. And the entire testimony of Stilson and Sanchez, of course, needs to be reviewed very carefully in that regard. But we will find when that happens that, and I'd like to start probably with Stilson because that sets up the defect, which is no longer disputed. Stilson testified that the return line opened at both ends. Now, this was a 10-year-old vehicle where rubber hoses connected a steel line that ran along the left-hand side of the car frame, and one end was connected by that rubber hose to a device that entered into the fuel tank. The other end was connected by a rubber hose to the engine system to return unused fuel backwards. He then testifies, of course, that he doesn't say that if it opens at both ends, there can't be siphoning, because of course there can be. It would siphon if there were only one opening. It would siphon at only one place, but it's going to siphon at the earliest place where it finds an opening, and that's going to be at the rear, where Sanchez testifies the fire occurred, and where Stilson says the system opened, the return line opened at both ends. Now, Sanchez, this is not a circumstantial evidence case on causation. We do see cases where, when all the evidence there is circumstantial, you have to look at all the circumstantial evidence to see whether an inference that's been drawn by the jury is a reasonable one. Here we have not only circumstantial evidence, and that really goes to the hoses, because they were burned and destroyed, and there was no way to visualize and recreate what they were. You had to go to circumstantial evidence to determine where the spill occurred.
Okay, let me ask you, does causation depend on whether siphoning occurred at the rear?
In this case, I think the answer to that is yes and no. The whoosh that did occur was the result of vapors, according to Mr. Sanchez's testimony. And there was fire in the engine compartment. Whether or not vapors could have formed in the front had there been siphoning in the front is a question. It's unresolved in this record. Now, General Motors' own expert, Herrera, testified that the crimped lines, the crimps in the front of the fuel return line, would preclude the fuel passing through the front of that line. General Motors' own testimony.
Let me ask you a second question.
Yes,
I think you're saying.
Yes, Your Honor.
You don't have to. You do have to show siphoning occurred at the rear to get causation here on this record, because it would be inconclusive if there were only siphoning at the front.
We have to present evidence that a jury could reasonably find caused a spill, that the siphoning caused a spill at the rear of the car.
At the
yes.
Rear. Okay. Does it matter how the rear opened up? Does it matter whether it burned through or whether it was caused by the collision?
I think it does. I think it may. And the reason for that is the whoosh. Again, it comes back to how did this car suddenly, after several minutes, from 10 to 20 minutes, become engulfed in this cloud of flames that ultimately killed Edgar Etichetta. If the line burned, there could have been just a jet stream of flame like at the end of a welding torch, which might not create that whoosh. And here, the spill at the rear, where there was no immediate fire, or no testimony that there was any immediate fire, falling on the ground, creating a vapor that spread until it found an ignition source and then exploded is what Mr. Sanchez's testimony establishes. Also, the eyewitnesses that were at the vehicle, and that's why this is not a circumstantial evidence case altogether, testified that the fire came from the rear, the whoosh came from the rear, and Mr. Sanchez, in his investigation, in reaching his conclusions, talked to all those eyewitnesses, talked to Stilson, observed the replica of the car, observed the car itself, the damage that went all down the side of the car, including the rear, where the rear hose was broken. And that's how he came to his opinion that the rear hose was broken, and that's where it siphoned. Now,
but the defect you're claiming is the siphoning, not rubber hoses or anything like that.
That's correct. The defect is the failure. Not only do we claim it, but now it's undisputed.
Anti-siphoning device.
To provide an anti-siphoning device.
So since that's your defect, you've got to have causation tied to that defect.
Correct. And the way the causation is tied to that defect is by eyewitness testimony saying that the fire came from the rear of the car, and Sanchez's testimony that the way that cloud of vapor became established was that the spill occurred at the rear of the car and the vapors then spread to an ignition source that engulfed the fire.
If I can summarize this. Stilson says there was siphoning and that's a defect. But Stilson speculates that it occurred at the front end.
He says that the he says he does do that, yes.
Okay.
But and I think this is important in the court's review, Your Honor, that where there seems to be issues of confusion or perhaps disagreement among the experts of the plaintiff here is on the very outer reaches of their expertise. You see, Stilson doesn't really know whether that hose burned or didn't burn. That's not his real area of expertise. Or how it opened up. The fire cause and origin and propagation expert is Sanchez.
Okay, so Stilson says the vehicle siphons and is defective.
Correct.
I think it siphoned at the front. He doesn't say I think it siphoned at the back.
But I'm sorry,
right?
I interrupted you.
Would that be right?
He says that that would be right, except we need to add to that his testimony that the system opened at both ends, that the fuel return line that runs along the rail of the car frame was disconnected at both ends.
He says he thinks it siphoned at the front. There's no direct testimony from him that siphoned at the back, but his testimony doesn't exclude it.
That's correct.
Siphoning at the back.
Absolutely.
So in order to get siphoning at the back, you've got to have Sanchez say that's where it happened.
That is correct. And Stilson, in his testimony, says exactly that, in slightly different words, of course.
It's up to the origin expert.
That I defer to Mr. Sanchez. He knows more about that than I do.
So, if Sanchez is not qualified to testify on where siphoning occurred, is there any other way you can get to the causation piece here? I mean, in other words, does their opinion depend upon whether he's qualified on siphoning or not?
No, it does not. And what this court has, let me rephrase. If the court reads, and I'm sure it will, of course, the very last page of tab 2 to our brief, it becomes very clear that what was said at the Daubert hearing was, we do not challenge Mr. Sanchez on siphoning.
But he himself says he doesn't know that.
He himself says he does not know the mechanics of siphoning. But he does know where the fuel spilled. So we have to have Stilson testify about the mechanics of siphoning and how it can occur. Stilson then says it opened at both ends. We put that together with Sanchez's testimony that the fuel spilled at the rear and the eyewitness testimony that the explosion began at the rear, and that places where the siphoning occurred.
Well, but the problem that we're struggling with that's not quite hooked up is whether the gas at the rear, gasoline fumes at the rear, came from siphoning.
And that, Mr. Stilson ran experiments with a replica car, set the car up exactly at the same angles, of course used water, he didn't use gasoline, and established that in the circumstances of this accident, that fuel system will siphon.
To play off one of Justice O'Neill's questions, it's essential to your position that the gasoline at the back of the car came from siphoning.
Of course. Because that connects it to the defect, which is the only exposure that General Motors has in this case, they admit.
Does Stilson say it could have happened at each end? I know he says it doesn't matter whether it did or not, but does he ever say, I think it was the front, but it could have happened at the back as well? I'll leave that to Sanchez to determine where flashpoint was.
He does not say that exactly. He says that in his opinion, the return line fuel system opened at both ends.
I'm unfamiliar. Gas vapors travel uphill?
Gas vapors, it depends
depends on which way the wind.
I've got to go back to Texas A&M, to my mechanical engineering courses, but it would depend on atmospheric conditions. They would be contained, Your Honor, to some extent by the structure that surrounds the vapors, which was, of course, the car.
Let me ask you also on the closing argument. We can't have clients standing up talking to the jury during closing argument, correct?
Well, we can't have a lot of things.
Otherwise, O.J. stands up during closing argument and says, I didn't kill her.
Well,
I mean, we that's got to be error, doesn't it?
Where there is no objection, it may be error.
Yeah, we'll get to harmful and objection later, but that's got to be wrong. Closing argument is not the time for clients to talk to the jury, right?
I would agree with that.
So, now, closing argument, client stands up, speaks to an all-Hispanic jury in Spanish. What happens when the defense attorney objects to them speaking in Spanish? That puts the defense attorney in a very ticklish position.
What happened here, of course, was that the only objection was made, there was no objection made by the time until later.
Until later. What's an all-Hispanic jury? I'm thinking, I've got an all-Hispanic jury, somebody just says something to them in Spanish, assume I don't speak Spanish, and I object to anybody saying anything in Spanish. That's a minefield, right?
Well, I don't know about a minefield, Your Honor, but they obviously do.
There's the potential that the jury's going to think, I think there's something wrong with Spanish.
That then becomes something that unless there's going to be objection, preservation of error, and so forth, which you indicated we're going to get to, can be handled in many ways. And it was handled in this case by General Motors counsel arguing to the jury after that, arguing to the jury in Spanish. Donato Ramos.
That's a good comeback, man.
Pardon?
No, I understand that.
I'm concerned about the jury charge, the limiting instruction. And your brief seems to focus on the fact that there was no objection to it or it was invited, et cetera. But I'm interested in the underlying legal point. I don't know if we'll get to it. But do you have cases that say that it's permissible to essentially remove from the jury the plaintiff's conduct in causing the accident where the mother was clearly at fault. To remove that in looking at the product defect.
The authority is actually in the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, Chapter 33, where liability of other responsible party can only be for any part of the damages caused by that other responsible party, or that is a way that the charge can be submitted under Chapter 33. Here, Mrs. Itacheta's negligence was not excluded. There's a series of questions. Did her negligence approximately cause the injury to Edgar Itacheta after the whoosh? The jury said no. And the definition of proximate cause that includes the piece element of foreseeability is what we rely on there. Could she reasonably foresee that there would be a siphoning because of a product defect in the car after that accident? The jury said no. They found the General Motors did have a product defect, and I think when you stitch together products liability and ordinary negligence, and then a comparative question, which did follow those but was not answered because it was conditioned on being yes to Ms. Itacheta and yes to General Motors, that is the logical and simple way to instruct the jury. Otherwise, a single question on comparative is going to get pretty convoluted. You're talking about one kind of negligence.
I understand the logic of your position, but let me ask it this way. Is it fair to say there's no case authority in point with a situation like this where you have an accident and then intervening time before something else happens that you could plausibly argue is related to the product and not to the initial negligence?
I believe that we cite cases where that is has been the case, where there is there is an event that occurs after the initial accident that causes it damage in and of itself, and that gets, of course, attention and focus in and of itself. But it didn't.
And instructs the jury in such a way that they focus just on that second part. You instruct the jury to restrict their focus to the second part.
Exactly. And that's what we think Chapter 33 directs us to do.
Okay,
if there are other questions, I'll be happy to try to answer.
On the causation piece, it's critical to your case that someone testifies the mechanics of siphoning when both ends of the line are opened up will allow siphoning at both ends.
No.
Why not?
It won't allow siphoning at both ends, Your Honor, because the siphoning is going to occur at the first break.
So it would be critical then that someone testified the rear was the first break.
That the rear is the first break, and that is established by circumstantial evidence in this case.
The rear has to be the first break, right? The rear has to be the first brake.
The rear would have to be the first brake because it's the first
opening
from the gas tank forward, of course.
Any other questions?
Now, Mr. Soles, when you say that Mr. Stilson testified that there's an opening in the front and at the back, I see that in the excerpt in Exhibit 4. Mr. Stilson in this excerpt, however, as I read it, is never able to say when both ends opened up. Says by the end of the entire event, both ends were opened.
Correct.
Isn't it important to determine when both ends opened up? If it is, as you've indicated, critical that the siphoning occurred in the back and the gas fire occurred in the back?
That is important, Your Honor, and the testimony of Mr. Sanchez doing his forensics establishes that.
But Mr. Stilson was never able to say when both ends were open, was he? Or is there some additional testimony that I didn't see?
Well, there's some direct, of course, there's direct evidence that there was enormous trauma to the vehicle at the point of the rear hose. And then, of course, the fire originated there and propagated from there.
Why
that's the evidence.
Why does Stilson think siphoning occurred at the front end?
I do not know, Your Honor. He gave that opinion, again, out on the outer reaches of his own expertise, which is fire. He is not a fire cause origin and propagation expert.
So he says it'll siphon at the point of rupture, first point of rupture.
He doesn't say that. But it can't. Once you have the point of rupture, then of course the line will empty, and that's the end of the gasoline that's going to go through the line going forward.
So he just says this doesn't have an anti-siphoning device. That's the defect, and Sanchez will have to tell you where it accumulated.
That's true.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Justice O'Neill, if I can pick up on your question was, why does Stilson say it siphoned at the front? And the reason is, he says it opened up both places. The both hoses burned through. There's no evidence of compromising at the back. So Stilson cannot, as the siphoning expert, that's not outside his expertise, as the siphoning expert, and that's the source of the fuel, Sanchez cannot talk about, he's not qualified to talk about where it siphoned, and that's the source. He only talks about what caused the fire. But back to the hoses point. He can't say what happened because it's burned away and there's no damage back here. The reason he can say it opened up at the front, and he can reasonably say that, is the fuel lines are damaged at the front. And that hose is gone too, but he knows the fuel lines are damaged there, and if they're damaged there, it makes sense that that's where the hole was. And that is the reason Stilson, and that is not outside his expertise. That is precisely why he was there. And the jury has to affirmatively disbelieve that in a circumstantial evidence review. And I'm going to disagree strongly with Arshetta here that this is not a circumstantial evidence review. If you go down to the only evidence of siphoning at the rear, which we've established this morning is critical, that's where it's got to siphon. And it's got to siphon there first because there's only one siphoning, got to go there first. In order to establish that, we got to look at this record. What's the evidence of that? The only evidence of siphoning, not opening up, but siphoning at the rear, is Sanchez. And then we apply a circumstantial evidence review. Because that hose is burned through, there's no direct evidence.
Because you say it opened up, I thought it was undisputed that the line opened up at the rear.
It's undisputed in the sense that both hoses burned away, and that's Justice Wainwright's question precisely.
Well,
you can't, Stilson can't say. It's pure speculation because there's nothing back there that shows damage. So whether it burned away or it compromised, if you could bring the hose in and say, look, there's a big crack.
Regardless of how it opened up, it's undisputed it opened up at the rear. Okay. If that opening will allow siphoning mechanically, which Stilson testified it would, then why can't...
No, he didn't testify that in the rear it would siphon.
No, but he testified that siphoning can occur wherever the line opens up.
Yes.
Okay. And why can't Sanchez then, being the fire origin expert, say there was a lot of gas here and it exploded, and the only cause...
That's not what he says, because he doesn't say there's a big pool of gas back here, because we don't have that evidence. What he says is the fire started back here, and that's undisputed, because there's no question, eyewitnesses and everything else, the gasoline fire is back at the rear. But he does not say, I could see a big pool of fuel.
No, but there's the whoosh at the rear, which he's going to say.
The whoosh is at the rear.
Leads to the conclusion that it was a fuel-fed fire, and the only source for that fuel... is the rear.
But there's also, remember, Stilson has said, I think the rear rubber hose burned through because there's...
I didn't say that.
He says, in his deposition, he says, I think it burned through, but I don't know, because he knows he's speculating. There's no evidence that it compromised. There's no direct evidence. So it's pure speculation. And he says, I think it burned through. Remember, there are grass fires. Eyewitness says, you've got to stamp out the grass fires to get to the vehicle. There are grass fires under that vehicle at some point. Now, Sanchez says, no, they were never. He discounts them and says, no, they weren't enough to burn through the hoses, but that's a possibility. Or it may have just been the final whoosh is what burned the hose. But that's not the equivalent of siphoning. And if I might quickly answer Justice Wainwright's question about the duty to supplement.
Let's come back to that. Let me follow up some more on this issue. What's the basis of your earlier statement that siphoning can only occur if there's one opening?
That's in, and it's undisputed, that's in General Motors Herrera's testimony, and I don't off the top of my head recall the record reference, but it's of course given in the brief. And he testifies there are seven principles of siphoning.
Yes,
and
but one I mean, of them is. We're not weighing this evidence or retrying the case. Is that principle something that's so established that we have to accept it as a matter of physics?
Well, this court in St. Joseph's Hospital versus Wolf has in 2002 said in a traditional no evidence review, and that's what GM's standing here and saying, there is no evidence that the defect caused the whoosh in the rear. If there's no evidence, this court is not precluded from looking at it. It does not have to disregard undisputed evidence. And there's no dispute in the record about these principles of fluid siphoning. Everyone agrees, and as I said, that's the Breakhold principle.
Well, did Stilson ever adopt your expert's position or disagree with your expert's position that siphoning can occur only if there's just one opening? Did he ever object to that or take issue with that?
There's a point, and I can't remember, there's a point at which someone says, you know, another hole's going to prevent that, and he says yes. I can't tell you that it was directly in answer to a question about the rear.
But that's
opening
in our record somewhere.
But there is in the record somewhere, and I can find that for the court.
The reason
there
I ask
where
is...
he disagrees with the principle, because, as I said, that's the Breakhold principle.
The reason I ask is, if Stilson undisputedly said that siphoning occurred at the front, and Stilson's opinion is that siphoning can only occur with one opening, that would necessarily preclude, at the time the siphoning occurred, a break in the back.
Precisely, Your Honor, and that's General Motors' point.
Any other questions? That concludes the argument in today's first case, and the court will now take a brief recess.
All right.